Welcome to the Deep Dive. You're here because you want to get smart, fast, especially on the legal stuff that matters. And as a law student, well, trust me, the case we're unpacking today, Salcim Reed Tribe v. Granholm, is absolutely critical.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it as a masterclass in a contract interpretation, showing you exactly how ambiguity can creep into agreements and why understanding the real-world context, like industry practices, isn't just helpful, it's often decisive.
That's absolutely right. Forget those abstract hypos for a moment. This is a real-world dispute, a Sixth Circuit decision grappling with a consent judgment from way back in 1993.
Wow, 93.
Yeah. This agreement was between several Michigan tribes, including the Hanaville Indian community and the state, and it laid out how revenue from casino gaming would be shared.
Okay, so the basic deal was a 2% cut of the net win from slot machines going to local governments. Seems simple enough, right?
Resurface, yeah.
But then, around 1998, the Hanaville community introduced these quick silver tokens, basically free credits players could use on special machines. Any winnings they racked up could be cashed out at a rate of 25 cents per credit. But here's the kicker. The tokens themselves couldn't be exchanged for cash directly.
And this is where the seemingly straightforward agreement hits a snag. Hanaville, following what they said were standard practices within the gaming industry and their own accounting methods, valued these promotional tokens at zero when calculating their net win.
Which makes sense from their perspective.
Their argument was logical. If the tokens have no direct cash value and can't be redeemed as such, they shouldn't be factored into the total amount wagered.
But Michigan saw things very differently, didn't they? They argued that because winnings from these tokens could end up as cash in a patron's pocket at that 25-cent rate, well, that represented the inherent value.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, those tokens should be included when figuring out the net win, which, of course, would bump up the 2% payment. So for you listening, you know, imagine the implications. This isn't just about a few free tokens. It's about potentially significant amounts of money hinging on how one word wager is understood.
Absolutely. Huge stakes. And to really get a handle on how this all played out in court, we've got a great set of resources for this deep dive.
Yeah. What are we looking at?
Well, you've got excerpts guiding our discussion, the actual Sixth Circuit case brief that lays out all the essential details, the who, what, when, where, why, and how of the case, including the procedural steps and the court's reasoning, and a standard brief that neatly breaks down the legal rules, the key questions, the facts, the opinions, analysis, quotes, any tests, and the final takeaway.
So pretty comprehensive.
Exactly. By the time we're through, you'll not only understand the outcome, but also the critical legal reasoning behind it.
Okay, so let's get down to it. What triggered this? Going from just a disagreement to a full-blown legal battle. What made the state of Michigan, through the governor, decide to take Hanaville to court?
Well, simply put, the state wasn't satisfied with how Hanaville was calculating that net win and, you know, consequently the amount of revenue sharing they were getting.
Mm-hmm.
They firmly believed those promotional tokens should be valued at 25 cents apiece and added to the total wagers, leading to a larger base for that 2% calculation. When Hanaville stood firm on their zero valuation approach, Michigan decided to seek legal enforcement of that original 1993 consent judgment.
Okay. And what happened in the first round? How did the district court judge rule on this?
The district court actually sided with the governor. Their reasoning was fairly straightforward. They took a broad view, essentially saying that a wager is a wager, and the form it takes, whether it's cash or these promotional tokens that can ultimately lead to a cash payout, doesn't change that fundamental nature.
So they weren't swayed by the industry practice argument?
Not at that point. They weren't convinced by Hanaville's arguments about established gaming industry standards or their specific accounting practices. The district court found the language of the consent judgment, particularly the word wager, to be clear and unambiguous on its face. They didn't see any need to look beyond the plain, ordinary meaning of that word.
But Hanaville wasn't ready to throw in the towel, were they? They took it up to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Hmm.
Now, before we dive into what the appellate court decided, this is a crucial point for you as a law student. Understanding the standard of review. What does that term mean here? Why does it matter so much?
That's an incredibly important question. Because a consent judgment is legally treated like a contract, the Sixth Circuit was tasked with reviewing the district court's interpretation of that contract specifically, the meaning of wager. And here's the key. They did so de novo.
De novo, meaning?
It's Latin, meaning anew or afresh. So the appellate court didn't have to give any special weight or deference to the lower court's legal conclusion about whether wager was ambiguous. They could look at the question with completely fresh eyes.
Okay.
However, any factual findings the district court made, the basic facts of the situation, those would only be overturned if the Sixth Circuit found them to be clearly erroneous, which is a much tougher standard to meet.
Got it. So the Sixth Circuit wasn't bound by the district court's legal interpretation of wager. And as we've said, the central point was whether that seemingly simple word clearly and unambiguously included these promotional tokens, just as Michigan argued.
Exactly. The district court had said, yes, crystal clear. The Sixth Circuit, however, came to a different conclusion. They found what's known as a latent ambiguity.
Latent ambiguity. Okay, break that down.
Yeah, this is a really vital concept for you to grasp. Unlike a patent ambiguity, which is obvious just by reading the contract like a missing term or contradictory clauses, a latent ambiguity isn't apparent on the surface. The word or phrase might seem perfectly clear in isolation, like wager here.
Right.
But it becomes ambiguous when you try to apply it to the specific facts and circumstances of the case, in this situation, the very specialized and unique world of casino gaming.
So it's like if you had a contract talking about shipping goods, seems straightforward. But what if the goods are digital files? The word shipping suddenly becomes ambiguous in that context, even though its everyday meaning is clear. Is that kind of what happened here?
That's an excellent analogy. Perfect. The Sixth Circuit's reasoning was that within the highly specific context of the gaming industry, the term wager might not have one single universally understood meaning, particularly when you're dealing with promotional credits that have a very particular function and valuation within casino accounting practices.
Mm-hmm.
This is the crucial point where the appellate court said the district court made a significant error by refusing to even consider the extrinsic evidence that's evidence outside the actual text of the 1993 consent judgment that Hannibal had tried to present.
And that evidence included?
It included established standards within the gaming industry and typical accounting procedures for promotional tokens, things the district court just didn't look at.
Why was the district court so reluctant to look at this outside evidence? I thought the general rule when interpreting contracts was, you know, stick to the plain meaning of the words used.
You're absolutely right. The plain meaning rule is a fundamental principle. Generally, if a contract's language is deemed clear and unambiguous, courts will rely solely on the ordinary meaning of those words and won't consider evidence from outside the written agreement. The idea is that the written contract should be the definitive record.
Right.
But the Sixth Circuit stressed that this plain meaning rule isn't an absolute ironclad law, especially when there's a suspicion of a latent ambiguity, that hidden ambiguity we talked about.
Right.
The appellate court emphasized that courts need to be open to considering whether the parties involved intended the common, everyday definition of a term or potentially a more specialized, industry-specific meaning.
So in this case, wager wasn't just a simple word with one meaning. It could reasonably be interpreted in more than one way, depending on whether you're looking at it as like a regular person or someone deep in the casino world.
Precisely. In its ordinary sense, a wager could be seen as anything of value risked on a game of chance, in which case those tokens with their potential 25-cent cash out value for winnings might fit.
Okay.
But if you look at it through the lens of the gaming industry, wager might be understood much more narrowly, perhaps only referring to actual cash or its equivalent that a player puts at risk. Promotional credits, because they aren't cash and can't be directly converted to cash, are often treated differently for accounting.
Okay, that makes sense.
The Sixth Circuit concluded that this potential for multiple reasonable interpretations of wager within the specific context of casino gaming created that latent ambiguity. And when a latent ambiguity exists, that's when considering extrinsic evidence becomes not just permissible, but essential to truly understand what the parties intended back in 93.
Now, I also noticed that Judge Katz wrote a concurring opinion. What was his specific angle on this? Did he agree entirely with the main opinion?
Judge Katz agreed with the majority's ultimate decision that the district court messed up by refusing to consider Hannibal's evidence, especially, he noted, since the district court had allowed Michigan to present some extrinsic evidence of its own.
Oh, interesting. So an inconsistency there.
Exactly. Judge Katz felt this was inconsistent, letting one side bring in outside info while denying the other. However, he also added a note of caution in his concurrence. He made it clear that just because the Sixth Circuit was sending the case back down doesn't automatically mean Hannibal would win.
Right. It just means the evidence gets considered.
Precisely. He emphasized that the district court, after reviewing all the presented evidence, could still ultimately conclude that the consent judgment should be interpreted in favor of Michigan's argument.
That's a really important point. It's not just about getting the evidence admitted. It's about what that evidence ultimately proves and how it sways the court. So for you, our listener, especially as you navigate law school, what are the really critical takeaways here? What are the key principles to internalize about contract interpretation?
There are several really crucial lessons. The first, and maybe the most significant, is the absolute necessity of considering the specific industry context when you're interpreting contracts, especially specialized ones.
Like gaming, healthcare, tech.
Exactly. Any field with its own jargon and practices, you need to be aware that terms might have precise technical meanings different from everyday use. Second, this case is a prime example of how to argue for admitting extrinsic evidence. Sault Ste. Marie really illustrates latent ambiguity.
So how do you make that argument?
To successfully argue that a seemingly clear term is actually ambiguous, you have to show it has a recognized technical meaning within the relevant industry, and that it's likely the parties knew and relied on that specific meaning when they made the agreement.
And zooming out to a more practical level, what's the big piece of advice for when our listeners are actually drafting contracts later in their careers?
Oh, the most valuable takeaway for contract drafting is this. Always, always define critical terms explicitly within the contract itself.
Leave no room for doubt.
Exactly. Don't leave any room for potential ambiguity, patent, or latent. In this case, if that original 93 consent judgment had clearly defined wager regarding promotional tokens, this entire long, expensive legal fight could probably have been avoided. Be precise, be thorough, especially with industry-specific terms.
So just to make sure we've got the final outcome crystal clear,
mm-hmm.
The Sixth Circuit didn't decide the winner. They reversed the district court and remanded, sent it back down.
Correct, with very specific instruction.
The lower court now must consider the evidence about gaming industry standards and accounting practices from Hannaville. So the district court has to take a second, much more informed look at wager using this outside evidence.
Exactly right. And that leads us to a really thought-provoking question for you to mull over. How might this whole legal battle have gone differently if that original 1993 consent judgment had simply included a clear, specific definition of wager covering promotional tokens?
It really does underscore the power of clear drafting.
It
absolutely does. And as you continue your legal studies, you know, keep these principles in mind. Ambiguity, extrinsic evidence, context. Whether you're looking at a business deal, real estate, even legislation, analyzing language for ambiguity and understanding how outside factors influence meaning is just, well, it's a core skill.
It's foundational.
It'll serve you well throughout your entire career. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us. We hope it's given you a clear understanding of this important case and the principles it illustrates. Keep exploring those complex legal topics. That's where the real learning happens.